Shavua Tov, everyone. This is the concluding shiur in a series that began quite a few months ago, which was entitled The Aguna Crisis, subtitled From Pillar to Post. I'm happy to report that the situation which was alluded to, that which was on page one of the post, has been resolved since the series began, fairly recently. That, I guess, is something which is good news. I'm told six. Mr. Metzger comments that there was supposedly with either a 5 or 6 digit payoff. That's what the rumor mill has, and that's from pretty good authority. And the question is, what about that? Is that good? Is it bad? So why do you think it's extortion? If even $1 is paid from wife to husband, we view it as extortion, and perhaps it should be viewed as extortion. But today, in the first part of the shiur, I'm going to be put on the devil's advocate hat and explain all the various rights that men have. I was asked to by Ronnie, everything seems to be on one side over here. What rights do men have? So in the first instance, I want to say what our best maintains in this respect, which is different from people on all different sides. That's how it usually is in life. And now from our Bezin's perspective, a husband and wife break up. What should happen? And the subtitle of today's shiur is the system fair? Well, what is the system? What should the system be? So in an ideal system, all disputes between two Jews come to Bezin. We're not discussing intermarriage, so by definition, both husband and wife are Jewish, and therefore whatever issues exist between them should come to a Bezin for a hearing and a decision, and life moves on. What happens in the following scenario? We have a series of attendees, intelligent people. Let's see what you have to say. The following scenario: a woman sues her husband for divorce in a secular court. His immediate response is, I'm Jewish, you're Jewish, this case belongs in Bezdin. I'm happy to put everything in Bezdin. Any issue you have, you can, anything on your agenda, I'm happy to go to Bezdin. And as a matter of fact, I went to Bezdin already, and here's the hazmana that you have to come to Bezdin. Let's say the Bezdin of America. There's a Bezdin of America, thank God, has a good reputation. So, she gives him a divorce summons in secular court. He responds immediately with hazmana to Bezdin of America. She ignores hazmana once, twice, three times, siruv, whatever it may be, and she's in secular court.
And she received a heterokosis?
No, not at all. Not at all. She proceeds in secular court without any heter, nothing. She's not interested in that. Now she comes and screams, I'm an aguna. So after all, I want to get. He says, come to Bezdin. She says, no. Who's right? I'll start with the ladies section. Who's right?
Of course he's right.
I don't want to hear from you. I want to hear from a female voice.
What if
the facts have
nothing to do with the
order
protection?
Nothing, no order protection, nothing. As you know, half of those things are frivolous, but not even, nothing. She says, I want to go to court. Why? I'll get more money in court. That's just something. So she's going against the halacha. All right, but all he wants to say is, at the present time, I'm not willing to give a get, because from the very get-go, she summoned me to court, I summoned her that next day to Bezdin, and she's refused consistently to come, and now she's screaming that she's an aguna. Is she right, or is she wrong? I want only the ladies to vote first. Is she right or wrong?
Is there more background history?
No history. She wants more money. She says explicitly why. She's honest. Some people are not honest. She's not. I want to go to court, I'll get more money in court. She may even be wrong, as a matter of fact. But that's what she thinks. I'll get more money in court, and therefore I'm not responding to the Bezdin. I'm a sarvanit, or yes or no, but I'm not going to Bezdin at all. And he says, why should I give you a get at the present time when you should be coming to Bezdin instead of going to secular court? Who's right?
But the Bezdin didn't rule anything.
How can the Bezdin rule? She's not coming.
How can she say she's an aguna?
So Mrs. Redder says she's not an aguna. I agree. In this particular case, absent anything else from the outside. So not everyone who claims that she's a Naguna is a Naguna. And this is from an advocate who spent countless hours helping out real Agunas. Not, I repeat, Not everyone who says I'm an aguna is an aguna. So we believe strongly this woman is not an aguna because she really should be coming to Bez. Okay, now fast forward. Fast forward. Three months pass, somebody could be 3 years pass. Finally, the secular judge gives his decision. This is a decision. Whatever it may be. It's not the point right now what the decision is. Now the woman comes screaming, I'm an aguna. The man says, what kind of aguna? Come to Beis Din and have everything retried from day one. I'll give you a get. Till then, I'm not giving you a get. You can sit white till you turn white for 50 years. I'm not giving you a get. Till you come back to the Beis Din to retry the case because I was ripped off. Now what do you say? Does the man have the right to keep her in chains until she turns white? After all, an expression that we use, she ba'abled him. She took him to a secular court, and according to his representation, which may be true, we don't know, she took 10,000, 100,000, a million, you fill in the blank, dollars from him, not rightfully. So what do you want from me? How can I be considered to be her to be an aguna? Okay, now what do you say? Does the man have the right to keep an aguna until death? Does they do that? One of the deaths will stop the relationship? Huh?
You just said in your thing, does he have a right to keep her as an aguna?
Right.
Who says she's an aguna?
Okay. So Mr. Metzger says that she's not an aguna, and therefore has every right not to give her the get forever. So that is not an unreasonable position. In our Bezin, we have not taken that position. We have taken the position that although he has been wronged, two wrongs don't make a right, and if it's impossible for him to get his money back, because she absolutely refuses, he should give her a get anyway. Give her a get anyway.
But not as an aguna. Give her a get, but she's not an aguna, or she is an aguna.
Well, that's a matter of semantics. Our Bezin will say that it's not a small matter. Not a small matter, but our business policy has been that an unfortunate thing has happened. This woman, despite the fact that from the very get-go, she was willing to come to Bez and send him out his money, she refuses to come. And therefore, he's been, we'll call the expression, ripped off, possibly. We don't know. We don't know what the Bez would have said. How are we ever going to know? Nonetheless, to cite the Pasuk and then say for Shmuel, Halonetzach tochal cheref, they're going to be fighting forever till the heat turns white and she turns white. What's the point? You've been mishandled. You've been mistreated. She wasn't. Is the system fair? She wasn't fair. She didn't play within the system. She went to secular court, got money, but she's probably not entitled to according to Din Yisrael. So what? You're going to make your own life miserable and her life miserable till 120? Give her the get. Will we call her an aguna? Probably not. But since we're telling him to give her a get, and he's not giving her a get, so we, in a sense, we're on her side, even though she's done something wrong, because we don't believe in keeping these things going on indefinitely. We have a number of agendas in this respect. Number one, we're afraid, sorry to say, that one of them, and especially if it's the woman, will act out and be active and could either be in violation of the Ten Commandments in her case or produce illegitimate children in her case. These things can happen. Now, you'll say, Halitayol Rasha v'yamus. Let her sin and let her do terrible things because she's a bad woman because she didn't go to Bezin. That's not been our position. We say, look, either she doesn't know she's supposed to go to Bezin or she doesn't realize the severity. Whatever, we try to after the fact. Before a civil decree comes, we will say to the husband, don't do anything. Why should she do anything? She's not an aguna. She mistreated you. But once a civil decree is given, so what's the point? We say to the guy, what's the point? In other words, you're right. She treated you wrongly. We're never going to put a serum on him. That we're not going to do. How can you put a serum on him? There's a serum on her. But at the same time, we'll tell him, you should give her a get, because otherwise you're just supposed to sit forever and nothing's ever going to be resolved. That's our position. There are people on either side of us. To those who will say, the minute she asks for a get, you have to give her a get immediately. No matter what. Even if he's willing to go to Bezin from the first get-go. We reject that. On the other hand, there are those who say, she didn't go to Bezin, let her stew in her own juices till 120. We don't say that either. So we're attacked from both sides on our base. That's more or less a position which we've taken in between, which is, as usual, gets attacked from both sides. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with it. But that's, yeah?
Isn't that the similar case, it's just the reverse? It's a little bit of the reverse of what you're chapter. In the case where there's a
cell. You're talking about the post?
Oh.
So let's go back to the post. Since we started with pillar and now with post in the last year. So the man, according to what we're hearing, and I'm not so clued and I have no first-hand information, it was a payoff of some sort. Is any payoff legitimate? Or is every penny considered to be extortion? So here's the story. I'm now the devil's advocate on behalf of men's rights, since I was asked to do so. And you can feel free to argue with what I'm saying, but I'm just going to play devil's advocate for a moment. You do know that if a man divorces his wife, and by Torah law, not just by Torah law, by Talmudic law, a man divorces his wife at will. It's Rabbeinu Gershom, who 1,000 years ago said you can't do that. But by Torah law, it's what's the one-sided. The man divorces his wife just like that. But, of course, to discourage him from doing so, there's a thing called a ksuba. Shlotei kala be'enav lehotzil. Should be easy in his eyes to send her away, because it's going to cost him. How much does it cost? So what it cost him today is a fairly small sum of money, although it's gone up appreciably as the price of silver went up. It's tied to the price of silver. Silver's up compared to what it was a few years ago.
$21.
It used to
up to $21.
Okay, but it used to be $5. So that's four times. It's the silver today. It's four times what it was 15 years ago before silver started climbing. I don't know exactly how many years. Right? So okay, it's still, relatively speaking, a small sum of money. The ksuba proper is a couple thousand. That's the ksuba sum in 50 shkolim that we read about. This is Parsha Shkolim. We call about shkolim, and we call the Tosefes within the dunya. I believe that even today it's probably still a four figure sum. Maybe it crept over five figures. You have to check the silver, whatever, you know, by the day. It's not much more than that. Can't live too long on that. But what was the principle of ksuba? The principle behind the ksuba was 200 zuz. Where did that number come from, 200 zuz? Anyone know where it comes from? What it's supposed to represent? I mentioned it once in my previous shiur. It's supposed to represent the amount of money you can live on for 1 year. 1 year. I thought I told you the story about the aguna problem I solved in one day. I never tell you that story. I guess I didn't, so I'll tell you. Since the last shiur, I always tell stories. There's a story, a Meister Shoya happened like this. I kid you not. A woman calls me on a Sunday morning. Goes back, I'm trying to think how many years it was. It's so hard to remember how the years go by. I think 15, 20, something between 15 and 20 years ago, I believe. I'm an aguna. What's the problem? Husbands want to give me a get? Why not? Well, we're fighting about this and about that. So I made a couple of phone calls. That one, I remember what was going on. I was late for a shiur. I didn't give a shiur somewhere downtown. I was late for it because she's aguna. Aguna stops everything. Then a call here. It turned out by some fluke, even though the Messiah Kedushin was a close friend of mine who was very straight, very, very straight, by some fluke there was no marriage license. Someone says, Gamzul Latova. My colleague committed a misdemeanor, unintentionally, undoubtedly. But it was, in this case, it was Gamzul Latova. There was no civil marriage. There were no children. There was nothing. So was it at all? Yeah, but we have outstanding issues. So I called the fellow, and I said, maybe the rabbi who got the fellow, I want to get you to be given today. Today? What about our issues? You give the get today, and you'll come back, meet me here in this room. This room wasn't so big then, but in this room, and we're going to have it in Torah after the get. The kacham, I arranged the get. The get was given that very day. This is, it's probably more than 15 years ago. It's probably before our Bezdin was sort of up and running. It was given by Rabbi Jachter. It was a Talmud of mine who was us getting, and he met them in New York City. The get was given, and they came back here. I said that shiur downtown, said the shiur regular yeshiva. Came back 2 o'clock, something like that. And I met him here. And they had their issues. And one thing she said, that's what's relevant to this case, I'm not forgiving the ksuba. This she already said from the beginning, and she told it to Rabbi Jachter. Usually as part of the standard, you forgive the ksuba. It's written into the standard text. Nope! I'm not forgiving my ksuba. I insist on collecting my ksuba. Fine? So, just to show you how people sometimes don't react properly, forgive me for saying this, I'm not going to have to identify what I'm talking about, who I'm talking about. So I listened to them both for an hour or two. You know, I don't know how many hours I listened to them. I said, good, I'll do my research. And a lot of outstanding issues, nothing of tremendous import, but, you know, did prove to get the mayor, and then we'll decide the case. Okay, now, listen for a second what happened. A woman calls me at 8:30 in the morning, when I just came home from shul, and by 1 o'clock, she was already, not an aguna, but a grusha. What would you say? Make a kiddush, yeah? A little stiff, say, may I give a, send a thank you note, something? That night, I come home, the guy calls up, the father of the girl calls up, starts screaming at me. So yelling at me. What? My daughter didn't feel that she got a fair shake at the hearing. I said, I haven't decided anything yet. Yeah, but the way things went, it wasn't the way she wanted. So she starts yelling at me. How about a thank you that your daughter, who said she's in Aguna at 8:30 in the morning, by early afternoon, she was already... Nothing. And the person who I knew from before, I still know. I always give him Shalom Aleichem, he gives me Aleichem Shalom. I don't want to give say any more, I don't identify who I'm talking about. But people should know better. Anyway, so now I have the ksuba. First in my life. What's a ksuba? Usually Rav Moshe writes how much the ksuba, doesn't pay to discuss it. It's always forgiven in the negotiations before they get... No! So here I was. I said, well, maybe, since I'm discarding what we call Pshara Krovel Adin, I can discuss things in the spirit of, you know, what's equity. Maybe in this case, I'm not going to the particulars of the case, I have a lot of sway. I give the smallest ksuba sum, which is the Ravadja's sum, the Sephardic sum, which is very small. The three-figure sum, the whole thing, Sakhaka, all three, it's a three-figure sum. Then, by now, it would be into four figures I'm talking about, but still, that was a three-figure sum, the whole thing. The ksuba with the zchukim and everything. On the other hand, I suggested, maybe I have a right to give this woman a whole year's salary. A whole year's, enough to last for a year. Support for a whole year. Because that's the spirit of the law. So I wrote this to a number of my very distinguished rabbi friends in Eretz Yisrael. They wrote me back, Chas v'Shalom, you can't give him more than the lowest level of ksuba because of a simple reason. The halacha, hamotzi mechaver, all of a right. Possession is 9/10 of the law. So since he's in possession of the money, you have to give it a smaller amount. Other rabbanim were a little more open to my situation. In any event, I derive from there that in a certain sense, think about this for a minute, in a certain sense, we can argue, I'm just using this in some sort of devil's advocate position, that a ksuba is fundamentally severance. Severance. You've all heard of severance. Employer, employee, severance. So a man says to his wife, sayonara, goodbye. Because after all, in the time of the Gemara, it was a unilateral decision on his part, goodbye. You send me to the street? If someone fires a teacher somewhere, you have to give severance. It's accepted severance. What's a severance? A year's support. So the person can support herself for a year. That's the principle behind a ksuba. Okay? Let's assume that now globally. And everyone see where I'm talking? Now, question. Does a woman have to give a man a ksuba? What? Crazy? I'm sounding like some kind of crazy feminist. A woman should write a ksuba for a man. We all know the ksuba is an obligation from man to woman. There's no obligation from woman to man. It's ridiculous to even think of such a thing. Says the Gemara in the Sechta Gittin, Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis. Mem Tes Amud Beis. Why, when it comes to ksuba, do we have certain laws? I'll read you the Lashon of the Gemara. V'chitema, ki hechi d'chi mapik la'iyu, just as when he sends her away, divorces her, t'kinu l'rabbanu ksuba mine. So he has to give her ksuba. Ki nafka ihi, what do you mean ki nafka ihi? When she's the one who walks out on him, Litkene le rabbanu ksuba mina. There should have been a ksuba from her to him. Toshma isha yotza lertzona v'shalo lertzona for isha nemotzia lertzona. So what does that mean? We're not going into all the details of the case. What it means is there's no ksuba from her to him because she has nothing to say. The get is given by him to her. So one could argue, if you want to be devil's advocate, that just as the spirit of the law indicated, as I wanted to suggest in my case, that a man should give his wife a year's severance if he is the one who sends her away, as it was in Talmudic times, unilaterally. Whatever year's severance happens to be, that was the ksuba. So too, it's at least arguable from this devil's advocate perspective that if she sends him away, she can't send him away. She can't write the get. But she can just walk out on him, and then he's in effect compelled to give her a get, however, so she should give him a year's severance. I'm not saying it's psak halacha. I'm saying you want to know, is every penny that the man takes considered to be extortion? One could argue, again, this is not a psak at all, but we're talking now in a sort of a moral realm. You know, what's the same way as no one would say that if the man gives his wife a ksuba, that's extortion. Of course not extortion. He obligated himself when he married her. So too, the only reason why she didn't obligate, why the rabbis didn't make her obligate herself, is because it's moot. Because by Talmudic law, the only person who decides to divorce or not is the man. But after Rabbeinu Gershom came and, we'll say it, leveled the playing field, so no longer can the man say, I'm not going to divorce you. I'll just take a second wife. Can't do that anymore. So she walks out at him, and she wants to throw him out, you know, etc. So then, in effect, he's compelled to give her a get, either because the community insists, or because he wants to be married to a woman, he can't have two at the same time, whatever it may be. So she's, in effect, the one who's initiated the divorce. It's at least arguable, if you're talking in the moral realm, that, you know, she should give him severance, same as he gives her severance. I'm just discussing from the perspective of Ronnie asked me a question, what does men have no rights and they're always the bad guys? So I'm not advocating that a man should ask even for a red cent. I'm not a chas v'sholem, and I'm not saying at all. But to throw the book at the guy, we have to be a little bit more careful. You know, if he's asking for exorbitant sums, so we're talking about six-figure sums, the way I heard it, it's way above even what it takes to live for a year. We in our prenup, so it's up to $50,000. That's what he says, of course, to live for a year as an individual, as a single person. So more than that, forget about it. Unless it's about millionaires when they have different standards. We spoke about that in the previous year. But I'm just giving you an idea. Ad Kan, part one of today's shiur, about the man. Now, is the system fair to women? That was the second subtitle. But, yes, I'm sorry.
But one thing is that this is from your time, but today she has to accept the get. So she can extort the same way by saying, I'm not accepting the get.
100%.
100%. But just the same.
100%. Unfortunately, there are men who are agunim. Because the wife said, I'm not taking a get. I want to stay married to you.
No, or I want money.
Or I want money. That's right. So it's like, so let me leapfrog. Before going about the women, let's discuss the system itself. So those who say the whole system stinks. Because people are involved in relationships and they can't get out. Can't get out. There's no way out of this situation. No way out. Either he'll say, I'm not going to give you the get. She'll say, I won't take the get. And Heta Meir Abonim is a different topic. But let's assume that it cannot be utilized. And in our best, and as a rule, we do not issue hetter me'rabanim in such situations. Only situations where there's, unfortunately, some kind of a mental illness, that's a different story. But if they're just arguing and fighting, as a rule, we won't do it because it's been abused too much. So they're stuck with each other. See how it works in the business system. Just to give a simple kind of an analogy, there's a system called good or e-good. You bought a building together, and now you want to break up the partnership. So, I'm not going into all the details how it works. I tell you, listen, I want to break up the partnership. So either I'll buy you out, you'll buy me out. You give a sum of money. This is much I'm willing to pay. So either I'll pay this amount of money for your half. You don't like it. So let's do exactly the same deal with exactly the same sum. There has to be some sum that you're going to consider to be 50-50. Instead of negotiating, here's a sum. I'm willing to pay this amount of money. You think the sum is less than half? Right? Good. So, we'll switch it around. I'm giving you the choice. Now, comes to, what's the point over there? The point I'm trying to make is, the person who wants out of the partnership has to make the first move. Because you want out. I don't want out. I'm happy to stay in the partnership. So when it comes to a marriage situation, it's a partnership. The person who wants out the most is going to have to, you know, do something actively to get out. Now, so therefore, as Mrs. Redder just said, the The woman can say, I have no intention of getting remarried. I've had enough of marriage. I've had enough of men. The men are no good, and I want to stay single the rest of my life. And I'm not gonna marry again. And since I'm not gonna marry again, I need a payout which is gonna last, pay me till I get to 120. I'm now 50 years old. I need enough money to last for 70. Okay, 70. So my life, my insurance policy, and my life expectancy. Age 50. Any doctors in there? 80, right? Something like that. She's already 50. By statute, last she'll live till 80. I need 30 years of support. I'm not going to marry after my experience with you. I'm going to marry somebody else. No, 30 years of support. That's not taking to get. Shalom. Now what happened? He's an agun. Again, what I'm saying is that all these activities to me are wrong. They're wrong. But you understand very well that is a system fair. You join a partnership. You want out. So there are only two ways to do that. Either that which is not the Torah way, and we could just walk out. Walk out. By the non-Jewish, in the non-Jewish world, according to halacha, if a woman is married to a man, so there is serious consequence if she doesn't behave herself. How do we know when she gets out of the... There's no such thing as a get. So it says in the Gemara, it's a famous Gemara in Sanhedrin, that she removes a head cover. Because in the time of the Gemara, even by the non-Jews, women would cover their hair. Takes off the head cover, that's it. She walks out. Divorce on demand. She walks out. He could also walk out. I don't know what he does exactly, but he could also walk out. Either can walk out. So it's a relationship, but it's not contractualized in a formal sense. Either could just walk out. Now, the Torah Kedosha could have made such a system for Klal Yisrael too. Could have. We believe, so when we get to the end of this year, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu's system is perfect. The system itself, people aren't perfect, but the system is perfect. Hatsur Tamim Polo Kichol Derachav Mishpat, which means HaKadosh Baruch Hu was perfect in the way he runs the world, notwithstanding so many bad things that are happening, that people are perverted and people are murderers and you name it. The system is just right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world right. People pervert, unfortunately. So too the Torah system is right. Not just history. Torah system is right. People pervert it. But the system is right. It's not proper for Am Kadosh that he or she should just walk out of a marriage like this. We want there should be a more binding relationship between the parties. So Kadosh Baruch Hu ordained. We're not here to question. We think that system is fair. It's the right system. Now, does it mean that a fair system cannot be manipulated by a person perversely? No. Any system can be manipulated. Can't help it. That's just life. That's life. But in principle, since the fact is that there is has to be a contractual relationship between a man and a woman to govern their married life, so therefore, again, a woman cannot just leave until she receives a get from her husband. By Torah law, I can divorce her against her will. Rabbeinu Gershom, in many ways, leveled the playing field by number one, saying it's a ban, a cherem, not to divorce your wife against her will. Number two, okay, so I won't divorce, I'll take a second wife. Can't do that either. So he's just the same way. By Torah law, she's stuck. By Rabbeinu Gershom law, he's also stuck. So they more or less level the playing field. Okay? So now you're left with a tough situation. Since we don't believe in getting out unilaterally, so there has to be some kind of a mutual understanding. So now whoever wants to get out more is going to have to, in what we'll call it negotiations, be a little bit more giving. Now sometimes people use this to an extreme. We call that extortion, etc., etc. So in the olden days, when we had the communal unity and authority of the Beis Din, we could, generally speaking, avoid such a terrible consequence. We put community pressure, etc. In today's world, unfortunately, there is not that unity, that authority. The whole Kehillah system broke down. We live in an age of emancipation. But because of the age of emancipation, it also enables individuals to conduct themselves in an unbecoming fashion, and demand exorbitant sums in exchange for a get. I mentioned earlier in this series that we're talking about five or six figure sums. There are cases of seven figure sums. They're very rare, but we don't have at least one. Which is, that's a travesty, a terrible thing. What happened? The woman didn't want to be a goon the rest of her life. The man said, I don't know, you'll sit for the rest of your life, and he was that kind of a guy. So, and there was some money and some family member or some man. So they paid him off. It's extortion. I agree. It's absolute extortion. 100% extortion. Okay? So it's terrible. So we can scream, Shrei Chai V'Kayim. We said in the Yotzvah, Chai V'Kayim. We screamed out Chai V'Kayim. It's outrageous. It's a perversion of the system. Doesn't mean the system is not fair. But there are people who pervert the system. And let's not forget, you talk about the system includes the remedies that unfortunately have been taken away from us, such as the Beis Din and communal pressure and authority. So you're left with a system without the mechanism of enforcing a more proper resolution within the system. So you're left with the system without the ability to enforce. That's why many unfair results exist, even though the system is fair both to men and to women. And I believe, we have to believe, because the system itself comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the realities of life, given the inability to enforce based on the emancipation and the inability of Bezin to enforce its will, and the inability of the community to unify sufficiently in order to put appropriate pressure, and that's really the community's fault. Because if the community wanted to, they could do more. I don't want to blame any individual chas v'shalom. But I'm willing to admit that some people whose first name is Rabbi are also at fault. We have to admit it. But in any event, we're not here to pin the blame on any particular person or group. What we're saying is that in theory, the system works. Just that, unfortunately, because of the recent explosion of divorce and the inability of Beis Din to enforce its will, there have been too many cases of unfairness, mostly to women, but also to men. You have to be very careful. I think it's only one side. There have been many cases unfair to men. I'll tell you a case that's pending right now. Of course, I have to be very discreet. I'm not going to give any details whatsoever. Man and the woman were married and they separated. And now, the case is in court. As often in these cases, who went first? He went first. She went first. It's irrelevant. Nobody came to a Beis Din and asked for a hazmana. The other party should get out of court and should go into Beis Din. Nobody. Not he, not she. So they're in court. Okay. So the court decided, rendered a decision, and now years are passing by. He won't give a get. So now he comes to the Beis Din, what we call a get timing hearing. This is a Rabbi Reese invention. He gets credit for it. It's worked wonders. It's unbelievable what this has done. People refuse to sign a shtar biruin to the Beis Din. They refuse to sign a document of arbitration which binds them to whatever the Beis Din says. They're too nervous. Everyone has what we call, forgive the expression, Eitzah Gebers. He has Eitzah Gebers, she has Eitzah Gebers, and you can't sign your life away to this crazy group of rabbis. Forget about it. Okay, so Rabbi Reese invented this new concept. Get timing, no shtar biruin. Nothing is signed. Zero. They walk into Beis Din. The first thing we tell them, we have a letter, they're coming for get timing hearing, we expect you to comply with the ruling of the Beis Din. And you have to be Mekabel Kinyan, pick up a pen. And they don't sign anything. Sometimes they try to walk out at that point in time. They already paid for the cab to get there or whatever, they drove. Okay. I don't even remember once when we couldn't get by that hurdle. Because they always say to themselves, what's the difference? I pick up a pen. I'm not signing anything. I can always get out of this if I want. Fine. So the Beis Din often hears a case. And then we've had cases in the past where the Beis Din issues a ruling. You have to give a get within 3 months. With conditions, without conditions, case may be. This is often proved very effective. Very effective. Why? Because once it's a Beis Din ruling, he has to give it within 3 months, he can no longer say, I'm a great guy. He walks around, parades around, I'm a tzaddik. I'm a tzaddik. No one ever told me to give a get. Da da da, we're fine. Moreover, one particular case comes to mind. Some millionaire had a situation like this, and a group called Ora, picketed outside his office in Midtown Manhattan. And for him, that was terrible, because it was business contacts. It was a terrible thing for him, terrible. I want to mention that I spoke this morning about Rabbi Shechter Shalita, who was the force behind Orah, who is the rabbinic authority upon whom they're relying to do these demonstrations. So we have to make sure that we understand who this man is. As I said this morning, he's probably done more for Agunas than anybody else, notwithstanding things which have been written about. All right, let's leave it at that. So he comes to our best, and we wrote a letter. And he said, whatever you do, rabbis, I don't want any more pickets. I don't know more picketing. He said it explicitly. Well, we wrote a piece of paper. 3 months, he has to give a get. He knew 3 months is another picket. So he knew. He gave the get. So you see, it happened in two steps. Get timing, that's innocent. What's a get timing? It's nothing. But once the letter comes out, okay. So now, we had a similar situation very recently. This time, what happened was, there was a court hearing, and the court decided certain things. And many of them were in favor of the woman. And the guy says, we spoke about it earlier, okay, let her sit till she turns white. I want everything should be retried. I looked at him in the eye and said, my friend, when the case came to court, did you ask for it to be brought to Beis Din? She's not from. So why? She's not going to come to Beis Din. Why should I? Did you come to any Beis Din and send a hazmona? She's not from. You're not answering my question. Did you? So he had to say no. So that means I said it to him in the nicest way. That means you're asking for two bites at the apple. First, you want to have to hear the case heard in court. Now that you're lost in court, you want a second bite at the apple. Now this is a choshen mishpat question. It's not a end of a marriage question. If you look in Simon Chavov, in the choshen mishpat, let's take it out. This case is discussed explicitly. But the nuances are very, very unclear and subject of dispute. And once again, our Bezna has a different position than some other Batei Din. It goes back to earlier sources. In Simon Chavov, Mi shaholach ba'kol shalakav v'nischayah b'dineyem. He went to court and he lost. V'chakach chozev v'tzvol if they honor Yisro. Now he wants to go, he wants a second bite of the apple. Ramah has two opinions. Yeshom v'she'en nizkakon lo. Marik, throw him out. V'yeshom v'nizkakon lo. Svar rishon ha'ikar. So the first opinion is that is the primary opinion which we follow. Comes in the Sivas and asks the question, what are you talking about? How can that be? Forget about the issue of coming to court or not coming to court. This individual who won in secular court is a thief, because he's holding on to money which was given to him by a secular court, which perhaps would not be given to him according to the Din Torah. Now, Baldin v'atzma yov deah shechayav lo pi Din Torah, sorach l'shalem lo. You have to go back to Din Yisrael. It's a suffer gezel takas yodo. So writes the Nesivus. Others disagree with the Nesivus. It seems that most both they didn't do not follow the Nesivus today. The question is why. It's for a much longer story, but I believe it is because since he agreed to be bound by secular law, so the only reason why a secular court's decision is not binding on a Jewish person is because there's a violation on the part of the person who won of lifnei v'lo lifnei goyim. Here, the person who won had no such violation. He was willing to go to Beis Din. The guy forced him to go to secular court. And he won in secular court. He wasn't in violation. So therefore, the secular decision is binding in halacha. And the reason for this is that dinim of B'nai Noach, we're also B'nai Noach. We also come from Noach. I don't go into the whole long discussion. So therefore, our business policy is you can't get two bites at the apple. Not only can you not get two bites according to our business policy once you lost in Beis Din, in secular court, but even if you were along the process, you didn't scream at the beginning, I want to go to Beis Din. You start to smell the coffee. I'm losing. Oh, I'm a Baal Tshuva. I want to go to a Bezin. From our perspective, even in that case, we won't give you a second bite under normal conditions. But in the particular instant case, he lost fair and square in second grade. He wants everything to be retried. So I'm not to tell you, we haven't reached a decision. We got papers are being submitted and counter papers, etc., etc. But the din is, from our business perspective, that whatever she gained from the second court, she's allowed to keep. P.S. It was a particularly successful case. The day that they came, she's been called about Aguna, not Aguna, whatever you want to call it. She went to second court, but he didn't cry foul. Had he cried foul, we said she's not so kind of, she he didn't. Apparently he was willing to go to second court with her. I might use the word Aguna for her. In any event, the get was given that day. That day? I remember distinctly that we had a sofa come and they gave the get just before the sunset. It was like one of those last minute things until it was written. It's a success story. On the other hand, now that our Bezin has to decide what to do with the financial issues, we will decide it based on Pshara HaKrova L'Din. You know what that means? That means that the Din may be one way because our Bezin has a particular position, but we recognize other positions. We'll take into account equity, da-da-da-da. That's a question of an engagement ring. That's, you know, the things that we normally deal with in the course of events. We'll take care of it. We'll try to be fair to both parties. I'm sure I can only give you one guarantee. At the end of the day, both parties will be dissatisfied. That I can tell you. That's usually a sign of a good ruling. Usually. Because, you know, people, usually, not always, it can be a bad ruling, but they're still dissatisfied. But anyway. So therefore, in my view, the system is fair. Are there people who pervert the system? Absolutely. Do they get away with it? Unfortunately, absolutely. If the Bezin had more power, we reduce that. If the community would have more power or more will, we could reduce that as well. It's a sad fact that there are many unfair things going on in the world, and we say that the system is good, Atur Tom and Polo, even though in the reality of situations, from what we can see, how do they say it today? Bad things are happening to good people. But just as we believe that in the general world, someone gets sick, it's not right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's inscrutable wisdom and how he runs the world. So here, the system is a good system, even though through the inappropriate behavior of either a man or a woman, there are unfair results. That's how I would summarize this issue. So the system is fair to the woman, I believe, because it enables her to get married. And we don't want men or women to be unmarried. Now, we talk about the shidduch crisis. Someone literally went to Rabbi Yashiv, Zichrono Livracha, because he was so burned by the single women. The Rebbe, maybe you should consider lifting the Chayim Rebbe Negersh. He meant it seriously. And, you know, we see a single woman just, you want to pull your hair out. The answer is, Nebuchadnezzar, my heart goes out to all these single women. Of course, Rabbi Yashiv sent them packing. Not because he was insensitive or insincere, or he wasn't listening, or... You understand, Rabbi Negershim was altering the system for the communal good. Obviously, the result of this system, which is for the communal good, which is good for 99% of people, is that 1% of women who can't find men, because maybe there's 1% more women than men in the pool, whatever it may be, it's for them it's a tragedy. It's true. But Rabbi Negershim, till today, we have to look at the greater picture, even though there may be individual suffering as a result of what's good for the general community. So here too as well, the system itself is a good system. Women are able to marry and to be taken care of by proper husbands who treat their wives properly. And with all that's going on in the world, Baruch Hashem, we have so many wonderful couples where they're happily married and they stay married. And it's a great system. Marriage is a great system. I want to tell you that in the outside world, it doesn't even exist anymore. There's no more marriage. I mean, people I know that deal with it, you know, in the outside, they don't bother getting married. Why should I get myself in legal entanglements? I live with this guy, I have a kid with him, I separate from him, I go back and forth. The world out there is Kimola or Zima. It's wild out there. We should thank Hashem every single day. Every Kiddushin, what do you say? Asher Kiddushan and Mr. Savitz, all right. We are Kadosh. Part of our Kiddush is Kiddushin. That we have the rules of marriage, that there are these contractual limitations. Once a woman accepts a ring from a man to be married to him, she cannot live with any other man, period. Now, at the end of the day, there's some cases where it's not fair. Look, Let's take a case which has no human fault. Rachmana litzlan. The man, happily married to his wife, and suddenly has a terrible, terrible accident, and he's unfortunately mentally incapacitated. Tragedy. Tragedy on many levels. For the man is a tragedy. For his wife's a tragedy. Now she's stuck for life. Unfortunately. Now, so is the system not fair? The system is very fair. But there are going to be these unusual cases where a fair system will unfortunately lead to an unfair result due to very unusual circumstances. It happens. It happens. Doesn't mean the whole system is not fair. Kodesh Baruch Hu is Tom and Paulo. We believe in Hashkacha Pratis. This terrible accident happened to this man also is quote unquote unfair. But in Hashem's system, something up there which we don't question. So that he had even a single man would have been just as terrible from his perspective. He'd be in a coma for 50 years, who knows what. Right? A vegetable. Terrible. Now he never has a young wife. You're pulling your hair out. It's terrible. Yes.
So, in a case like that, the husband maybe would have wanted his wife to be able to get a get if he was in that kind of situation.
Right.
So, is there any kind of...
Very good question. Very good question. As a matter of fact, there was a very unusual ruling or semi-ruling from a certain rabbi in Eretz Yisrael who wanted to write a get zikuy in such a case, which means we know the man wouldn't want his wife to be in the situation, so therefore write a get and give it to her on the ground that he certainly would have wanted to give the get. And this is so counter to every... It was written up in the newspaper, it was on the blogs, all about this, why rabbi suggested it, and the chief rabbi wouldn't allow it, and how could the chief rabbi not allow it? So he quoted Rabbi Avad Yosef, who was known as the... He helped Agunas probably more than anybody. All kinds of Agunas. The classical Agunas in wartime, and the modern Agunas. He did everything to help an Aguna. He can't help you. You know what he did? This is written up in the blogs. He went to the bed of the person who was in a terrible vegetable with 10 people, and they davened, forgive me for saying this, they davened that he should die. He's not going to... His life is no life anyway. And he died. It took a couple of years, anyway, but he died. And then she was able to remarry. It's such a sad thing to say, but he's not coming back anyway. He's never going to be aware of it. What kind of life is that? We spoke about that in a different series of Shurim about end-of-life issues, which is maybe next year. We'll talk about it some other time. But that's what happened. It was written up in the papers. Anyway, you never have the papers telling the truth. Yeah, that's the judge, but at least it was written up. The reverse of she. So that's where Het Haneir HaBanim comes up. But that's a legitimate Het Haneir HaBanim. That's legitimate, because by Torah law, he can take a second wife. So we allow a second wife. We have such cases. Nebuch, what a terrible case. A woman, a case we had, where she gave birth to children, and then something happened in the delivery, and she was out for life. We did something unusual in that kind of a case, which was, we allowed the man to remarry. We gave, we had to marry upon him, even though there was no civil divorce. And we'd never do such a thing under normal conditions. Never. Never. The problem was, if he would divorce her somehow in secular law, she'd have no insurance, and she just... It would cost her parents who knows how many dollars. So we made a certain exception to that rule that they were still civilly married, which is nothing wrong with that officially by law. And whatever, if he was to decide to remarry Jewishly, so, okay. Look, the outside world is done all the time. Yes, absolutely. The get was deposited, and by some miracle, she'll wake up. I haven't followed the case, but I don't know if I've ever. So, our Bezin tries its best to do what's fair and right in very difficult situations. We're dealing with these situations, and unfortunately, we had the following just recent case. We just dealt with this last week. The woman is half in and half out. So, the man said he wants a Het Haneir HaBanim. So, I thought you can't do it because the woman has certain. A knowledge of what's going on. I said, well, why don't you just give her a get? So he said, okay. But then they came to us, spoke to a physician. If you give a get, she's going to have a terrible downturn emotionally. It could even be physically harmful. So we don't want to give a get. It's going to, she could lose her life. Who knows the result? She's in a very bad way. So Rabbi Schwartz, who's a tzaddik, overruled us all, basically. I mean, we have to say this among friends. He said, we're going to have to allow a Het Haneir HaBanim in this case. Even though a get could, in theory, be given. Which I have never done that in my life. But, you know, I bow my head to Rabbi Schwartz. He's our Bezin. And that's what's happening, apparently. So, and again, I'm not mentioning any names. But we try to be fair as much as we can. Yes, ma'am.
What was the idea behind the time gap? Was it like a control issue? What was the whole concept?
Which case?
Get timing issues?
Get timing.
Yeah, what was
no, that? He doesn't want to give a get because he feels he wants to extort money or whatever.
He can't certify extra time and he's not going to have a rally outside of his office. Does it work?
Doesn't always work. As you notice, the pillar to post case was resolved. But the other case that was making headlines then, where there was a report with three words called Baruch Mater Asurim, as I spoke about in the previous forum, that's very, very questionable. There was we spoke at great length, about when we can arrive at a decision known as Kiddushei Tos, that there was such a serious problem about the man that the woman would never have married had she known that, etc., etc., etc. Those were very rare cases. And if you want to rule on such a case, you have to get up there and sign your name, and this is the reason, and these are the facts, and get up there. And if the person on the other side wants to shoot, say shoot. Unfortunately, in this case, as up to this point, nothing's changed since we spoke last. To this point, no rabbi has said, it's me. And as I said before, even if it's me, it's not enough. I want to know what the facts are. These facts could be contravened. They could be false facts. I wouldn't be surprised if false facts are involved in this particular case. Could be. But so I said, and I'll say it again, the woman is a presumptive eshes ish. I'm not saying she is, because apparently important rabbis think differently. But as a presumptive, because we presume she was married in a kosher marriage ceremony, you cannot invoke Kiddushei Tos unless you sign your name and give all the facts out. Don't say, well, I heard this and this. No, maybe the facts are wrong. Especially in a case like this where the husband is alive and well and living in... Yeah, not that far from here.
So we're relying on the woman. We're not relying on the rabbi, because we don't know who the rabbis are. For all we know, they could have received smicha during the time of the Vietnam War when...
I'm not relying on anybody. You can't rely. That's exactly the point. It's not reliable. That's my whole point. Okay. I want to end, because I only have a few minutes, with a more general discussion, which really could take an hour. And we did speak about it at the beginning of the series quite a number of years ago. We're discussing the old issues of men and women way beyond the context of the Aguna crisis. And we explained at the time that whatever differences exist between men and women, we had four categories at the time. Those may have good memories. Anatomy, bris versus nida, zman gerama, and Talmud Torah. And for those who would like to see a proper tshuva which relates to the events of the day, tefillin, etc., please read Igros Moshe Ora Chaim Chelik Dalid Simon Mem Tes, written to Rabbi Kellermer in his tenure in Brooklyn and the Boston area. Where Moshe writes that those who think that tefillin is as important for me as for a man, he considers that to be kfira. Moshe did not use those words lightly, but that's not for another series, not for tonight. Then the issues of marriage and divorce law, which we just spoke about. And finally, the most sensitive, the public versus private role, which we spoke about in the past, about monarchy, you know, and other offices according to the Rambam, about testimony, about inheritance, about minyan, etc. And our bottom line was that the result, all of these categories, and everything fits into one of those four, is based on one immutable biological fact, that women bear children and not men. Obviously, all the divorce laws depend upon that, because a man can have two wives, technically, but a woman can't have two husbands, because who's the father? Pre-DNA, and even afterwards, you know, you're not going to change the halacha now. That's the anatomy, obviously. That's where Moshe's tshuva tells us that an important thing is that a woman should be able to take care of her children, and therefore she's exempt from Zman Gerama and Talmud Torah. And that's also why we try to enable her to live in a more private area, Bas Melech Penimo, which is, again, not a pejorative, but it's something which is mostly complementary. As I've mentioned in many past occasions, this expression from Tillin, called Kvuda Bas Melech Penimo, is used in the Medrash to describe none other than Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest of all people. So we believe that the Torah does not discriminate against women. And that must be said 1,000 times. Rav Moshe has in that tshuva, the Kiddush HaShem Kiddusham B'Sosav V'Tzivanu applies to women as well as to men. My Rebbe said it so many times, the same level of Kiddusha. You already spoke. Shalom asan isha, the big tumult. All it means, look in the sources. Just look in the sources. In Tosef and Brachos, it explains, because the man has more mitzvahs than the woman. It's simple as all that, no more, no less. They make a whole straw man and they attack him. It's just not true. I explained to you that Shehasadik Ritzono, in my opinion, is simply her retort. You are chayav in more mitzvahs, and I have the ability to bring children into this world, which you don't have. That's exactly why I have it exempted from those mitzvahs. And our final remark, again, things we've spoken about in the past, the Gemara says in Masechta Brachos and Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph that Gedol Haftocha Shivtiach HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Nashim Yosem Min HaAnashim, that women are going to get even greater reward than men. So it's more than just equal pay for equal work. Women are getting more pay. I'm going to complain. Why are women getting more pay for the same? So I explained to you that the next line of the Gemara is Noshim B'mai Kazachin. How do they get? Which I interpret to be not why are they paid. We're talking about real dollars and Olam Haba dollars. But not just why they're paid. Why they paid more? Otherwise, why is Achen? They have Shabbos, they have Kashas, they have Shabbos. Why they paid more? And the answer is because, as the Gemara puts it over there, they take the boys to yeshiva and they wait for husbands to come back from the Beis Medrash, which I interpret to mean that they have a more private role. And in the world out there, which publicity is considered to be everything, we call it kavod ha'meduma, illusory honor, that's the end of the world, is to be, and they're getting a little less of that. There's a payback time in Olam Haba, they get even more schar. It just balances out that the men get more in this worldly currency. That's referring to old shiur. I want to conclude the concluding shiur by saying that I appreciate everybody came, that people came and they asked good questions, and I hope I try to answer them properly. I apologize if I maybe gave an improper answer or I spoke a little bit inappropriately sometimes. Maybe I snapped back at somebody somewhere in the series. For this, I apologize. We try to speak in a proper tone. And as I mentioned earlier this morning, the fact that the answer that is received is not the answer that is requested doesn't mean that the person isn't listening. He's listening. But sometimes the halacha says the answer is no. Rav Yashiv said to someone in a different context, "Anachnu lo ha-balabatim al halalocha." We're not the balabatim. We are trying to be honest stewards of the halacha, to give over the halacha as we understand it. We can't just go against halacha because our hearts break for somebody. We're just not allowed to do that. Then we wouldn't be doing the right thing. So we should be zoche that the remaining issues before us in the Aguna crisis should be resolved. And we should reach a time when all the issues will be resolved, when the system of Ashiva Shavtenik of Erishono will come back. The B.S. HaMashiach B'mehera B'yameinu Amen.